Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. I'm your host, Tatrunk, and I'm joined this week by the self-professed non-Tatrunk enabler. I think you put it, didn't you, last time I spoke to you? Mr. Raj Baines. How you doing, Raj?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. The only reason I said that is because I call you Jack rather than anything else.
Well, yeah, but it was just in reference to that. Because, right, I don't know if you saw it after Sun got his Player of the Month award, Raj tweeted out from the account like a little, you know, little emoji thing that was basically supposed to represent each member of the pod and their opinions on Sun. And, you know, mine was a funny little man with blonde hair, which I think in these sensitive times of, you know, identity politics and emoji identity politics in particular, I was deeply offended by you making me a little yellow man with blonde hair, I'm going to be honest.
He wasn't yellow, he was white, just blonde. The other choice I had was, the only dark-haired one I could give you was had that weird porn stash. So, well, I thought that blonde was less offensive than porn stash.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a close-run thing, that one. There is like a youngish boy that you could use, so it's darker. But anyway, I
did give Seb an old man, so it's not as if like you came off the worst of all of them.
The point I was trying to make initially is that I told Raj that he should have used the elephant emoji, and he refused. So there is, in short, well, actually in long form,
there's nothing short ever on this podcast. No.
Sigh for your Willy.
Cheers,
mate. Yeah, it's just a bit of lads' bants, mate. You know, I think we've got to dip our toe into that one every now and again.
Like Dan Bowers.
That was good. I haven't seen that video for years. Wow.
Is it taking you back?
Yeah. It's taking me back to my days of Loaded and all that sort of malarkey. Anyway. It's no Seb this week. He's off sort of pretending like he's above all this now, doing his, oh, I'm a professional, doing writing about stuff, you know, whatever. We don't need you, Seb. So, yeah, you enjoy watching Red Monday, you sell out. It was an interesting weekend, mate. Let's jump into the football. 1-1, that's pretty much the most predictable score headline of them all, isn't it? 1-1 at West Brom for Tottenham Hotspur. A few little talking points, notably, well, just to run them down, Ali's goal, Alderweireld's injury, the performance of Vincent Janssen, fact that big bad Nasa Chadli scored, and the fact that we didn't win the game. Let's start first of all with the performance at large and the fact that Son didn't start. Were you surprised by that?
Given his form, perhaps, but with the Champions League game coming up, there's always that sort of perhaps thought in the back of his mind that he'd wanted to play him against Leverkusen away, which is going to be another big game for us in terms of getting through the group. So it's going to be... He did say, didn't he, publicly, that he's going to start rotating more. So that could just be a byproduct of that, really. It's sort of... In theory, we've got a much deeper squad much deeper squad than we did last season, with more useful options, so to speak. But I wasn't too shocked, to be honest, because I don't think there's going to be many times this season where we're going to see the exact same 11 play game after game, especially with when we've got two games in a week as we do this time around.
I think that's one of those things that, again, is credit to Pochettino, really, isn't it? That I think in under most other circumstances, and it may well prove to be an undoing of sorts, but under a lot of other managers, with a lot of other teams, the fact, if you don't have a settled starting 11 would probably be a point of concern for some. But as we've said previously, the fact that we seem to have so many players that are so well drilled that can kind of drop in and out seamlessly into our starting 11, is again further credit to Poch.
He did that fairly well last season, and obviously there was the slightly concerning end to the season, but I think that was down to other factors rather than anything we should be too worried about having repeated. But we had games last year, for example Dortmund away, where he essentially had to just play largely a reserve side, and he played, some of the more promising youth teamers rather than playing the full options. I remember you saying after you went, and all the German fans wanted to ask you about was Harry Kane, and they didn't get the chance to see him then because I don't think he even played in either leg, did he? So he definitely didn't start either leg.
No, I think he came on in the second leg, didn't he?
Maybe. Perhaps. I have a sneaking suspicion he didn't play a minute. Because I think that was when we were getting towards that point where it was really starting to break into a two-horse race, so to speak. So there was that, but I don't think that's going to be as drastic this year, because, as I say, you'll be able to muddle it around a little, so there won't be a case where Eric Dier will play sort of every important game going, for example, because that's what he did last year. I mean, the lad had, he played ridiculous amounts of minutes last year, as did Harry Kane and whatnot. So the fact that we do have people to come in and relieve the stress a little bit isn't a cause for concern, really. It's just a part of making the squad better.
It was pretty drastic how much better we did look, though, when Son came on. Again, it just kind of proves, as you said, the rich vein of form he's in at the moment and his quality. Not so much better, but I don't know. I felt that was more menace to our attack.
I think he's obviously got wind in his sails. He got Player of the Month, and there's obviously loads of talk about him at the moment because of how well he's doing, and everything that we were told sort of even negatively about him coming from Germany is that he's a player that at worst blows hot and cold. So this is definitely him blowing very hot. So to see him sort of have that swagger about him, have that self-confidence, isn't too much of a shock. As we've said, and as Seb's alluded to plenty of times, it's about whether or not this can stretch across several months and be not just a hot streak for a few games at a time, but be something we can come to rely upon and expect from him without being disappointed at all. Obviously, nobody's going to be amazing every single game, but if they're better than average more often than not, that's all we can really ask for. And at present, he's doing that. As we said, the reason we left it so late when we said we were going to speak about him again in January, towards the end of January, I think it is purely because then that's a decent enough sample size. That's what, pretty much half the season. And if he plays like this for half a season, then I don't think there's really an argument to be made against the boy.
It's one of those things. I think it's an apt segue, given that Son, to my mind, is essentially replacing Nessa Chadli within our squad. And it was really a classic Nessa Chadli performance against us. On the weekend, in respect to he didn't really influence the game much. He didn't ever really look like he was that much of a problem, and we wouldn't be able to handle him. But yet he still popped up with a goal. And I know there is that joke about, all he does is score goals, but the lad's got that. He's got that in his locker, and it was disappointing to concede it. And it did look. I felt we were going to lose at that point, annoyingly.
Yeah, as did I. I think it was one of those where if you concede that late on and sort of the narrative is shaped as nicely as it was with him scoring, you sort of go, this is one that you've just got to write off.
But we did persevere. We got the point. And I wanted to talk about as well, before we go on to Alderweireld, Vincent Janssen's performance. And his general place within the team at the moment. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I felt from that game, I mean, but by no means, like, I want to severely caveat this first of all by saying I feel, obviously, that every single player, when they're coming into this team, you know, they need some time. Like, I'm not going to be knee-jerk and say a player is not good enough or so on and so forth after a handful of appearances like he's made for us. You know, we've been patient with Lamella, we've been patient with Son. I'm sure there are various other examples in there. And, you know, that's paying dividends now. So, yeah, I'm not by any means advocating that we get rid of Janssen, but I do feel the
hot take incoming.
It's okay. It just I as I was watching the game, there were so many points where I felt compelled to just shout at the screen, mm-hmm. get towards the 6 yard box. Like he's made, like, he's held up the ball well. He's played it off onto someone, and it just seems it's that move. It's after that play where he's laid it off, where he doesn't seem to have that impetus to go forwards. It's almost like he's shirking that responsibility of being a goal scorer. Where you see someone like Harry Kane, I don't think it's completely fair to compare him to Harry Kane, who is, let's be honest, a freak who can do pretty much everything. And we were talking about this the other week, how much you kind of appreciate that since he's been out of the team. Mm-hmm. It just seems like there's that. He feels like he's a bit out of sync with the team at the moment. And I'm not saying that he doesn't provide anything. He does a lot of stuff very well. But where I would like to see him operating as just an out-and-out centre-forward, I think that's the most obviously lacking part of his game at the moment.
Yeah.
And something that he does, that I feel we can begin to criticise him for. Not vociferously, not demand that he's shit and that he goes out. But I feel in terms of, like, you know, someone settling into a team, you do have to identify fairly early. Or at least I think the management do, not me, some knob sat on a fucking sofa watching it. But where a player does need to improve immediately, and I think that is something that he needs to. There were a couple of times when he had his back to goal where I feel he could have probably rolled the defender and taken a shot, as we see Harry do all the time. That's an accidental Arsenal fan there referring to him by his first name.
Yeah, if I play a good cop to your knee-jerk cop.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm not saying you are being knee-jerk.
Sell him. No, sell him. That's it.
The thing I'd point to is sort of, I mean,
shoe-lip windmill nonce.
If you go back and listen to the first couple of episodes that we did of this podcast, I don't think we worked together as well as we do now. I don't think it will sound as natural. I don't think it will sort of be as good a product or as polished one. And I'm not saying this is the greatest thing in the world. I'm just saying it is better now than it has been at any other point in its history. And I think that's the same case with Janssen. He doesn't look to have properly gelled with the other players because I don't think he's had the time on the field with them yet. I think it is getting slowly better. His build-up play, there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. And I think his movement, as you say, outside the box is extremely intelligent. And I think there is a direct correlation between how many goals the midfielders around him are scoring now that it's him leading the line and not Kane, because Kane does have he's got more of a tendency of just sort of taking responsibility on himself, turning and taking those half chances rather than moving the ball on. I mean, I only have one small fractional bugbear with Harry Kane, and it's that he does have a tendency to hit a lot of long drives straight into the legs of defenders rather than passing it. When this pass is open to him, he still will have a shot. And I'm not asking him to stop doing that, because you know what? Every other time, he will hit a corner, and that's what you want to see. But Janssen isn't that type of player yet. I mean, if you saw the highlights of his performance for the Netherlands, he did exactly that. He rushed on to just behind, and he hit a rifle with his left foot from, you know, 25 yards out into the other corner, and it was absolutely fantastic. And it was just that difference of sort of being more secure and happier and more comfortable in his surroundings, I think. And I think that's just what's lacking now. I mean, perhaps we have such a good striker to compare him against, as you say, it's an unnatural comparison to make. He is a tad younger. He has come from a league that isn't sort of at the same level of the Premier League. That's not even sort of a little Englander being sort of like Serie A and La Liga or crap. That's just the Eredivisie isn't of the same level as most of Europe's top leagues. I don't think it even is classed as one of Europe's top leagues. So there is all those sort of, you know, mitigating factors, and as you say, he does deserve the time.
He's a bit of a pudding as well at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he has got a bit of a tub on him, which, he, I mean, yeah. If you look at...
I quite like it. I find it endearing. But as a larger gentleman, I find it, you know...
He does use it to his advantage. I mean, I don't want to speak about his bottom every time we come on the podcast, because maybe he'll develop into some sort of fascination. But he does use his size to his advantage in terms of, you know, having his back to goal. I mean... That is, he does have a slight fridge-like quality about his size as well. But
I think he's been on the Dutch delicacies. I'm going to call them. They're called like proffages. Is that how you pronounce it?
Poffages.
I thought you meant weed.
But they're like mini. And when I say mini, like mini pancakes, but you have like a whole big plate of them and you cover them in like ice and sugar and maple syrup and stuff.
I don't like, see, I'm nah. odd like that when, you know, when there's pancake day and that, and it's sort of against the law not to have one. I have mine plain because I don't like them.
Really. Mate, but these aren't like, they're not like crepes or anything like that. Like that. And I'm
crepes
not,
are what
I don't
you have on your feet. Do you mean crepe?
I don't know, mate, whatever. I don't really have like a sweet tooth, but these are banging. They're banging, mate.
I've never
good.
Been to Holland. I really want to go.
Oh, you got to go. Amsterdam's quality. Yeah, so. Not just for all the vice reasons. Like, it's incredible.
Mate, I want my Instagram to be popping with that canal shot. I'm jealous every time I see it pop up on everybody else's feed.
Mate, it's banging. It's worth lovely
the,
city.
Yeah, no, I do want to go. I think it's that and Italy are two places I really want to go to. I haven't been to either yet, which is a shame. I've been to loads of places outside of Europe, but haven't done Europe as extensively as I want to, which is a shame, just as we leave sort of...
Yeah, the, I was going to say, yeah.
I'll fit in an inter-railing trip before that happens. Anyway.
Proffages is something I was going to say, yeah, that's what Vincent Janssen probably eats loads of, the fat bastard. But Toby Alderweireld... Poch has said today...
He's made it sound like he's just a bang.
Yeah, it doesn't say that. I think, and given what Spurs are like, I mean, you know, the fact we've never really heard anything proper about Harry Kane
and his injury. I think he was quite clever with that one, though. He just flat out refused to put a timescale on it. Because, I mean...
Remember Danny Rose's turf toe, the fucking years we had that going on as well.
He was out for like a full season with that. That was weird.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And then out again for a few months only after that. But Spurs don't like to often come out and say, yeah, they'll be all right. And they've pretty much said that about the world. But I'm going to be honest, the way he went down with no contact from anyone, seemingly just landed badly, I was like, he's done his cruciates or something, hasn't he? Like, he's fucked. That's him for the season. And it's the way he got up and went straight back down again, couldn't move. My heart was in my mouth and the arsehole was on the floor, you know. It was horrible. But it looks like he's going to be all right, so we're still on course to the league,
touch wood,
which is good, yeah. Which is obviously good. And we'll end this. We'll end the West Brom section.
One thing I do want to make clearer, or one thing that Pochettino definitely made clearer, I think, in that West Brom game is that he had plans for Chadley at the club, and as we sort of guessed, I think in pre-season when he left, is that he did just have that ambition in himself to go and be the big man elsewhere. And I don't think we can be angry or deny him that. He didn't leave in acrimonious circumstances. He didn't go and leave to go and sit on somebody else's bench or make a sideways move. He he stepped down to take a step up in his own career, which and I know is a strange turn of phrase, because I think his career opportunities at West Brom aren't going to be what Tottenham can offer him. But he'll get more minutes, he will, you know, get more exposure. And if there is, you know, another club of Tottenham size that becomes interested in him again, it'll be off the back of being the big man somewhere, and that might earn him a higher stature within the next squad or team he goes to. So you can understand why he's done it.
It feels like that type of signing we would have made, sort of, you know, roles reversed 10 years ago when, you know, for example, like the random ones we saw when we signed like Danny Murphy or Jamie Redknapp even, or Tim Sherwood, dare I say that name, but those kind of players where they're not quite good enough for the team that they were playing for anymore, but we sort of represent that option where they could have in theory come in and being sort of the big dog, as it were. Kind of like how, you know, you had like Butt going to Newcastle, that kind of stuff. It's, I don't know, it heartens me to see that players that can't really get into our team, that don't look good enough to be starters for our team, are, you know, quite clearly one of the best, if not the best players at another Premier League club. It's good seeing. Chadley is, you know, we know he's limited, but he's by no means a bad footballer either. It was a shame to see him go. I think, you know, his few goals gone, but, you know, we go on. Dele Alli's goal. Now, I at the time, you know, it looked like a toe poke, and I was just going potty because we'd equalised. But having watched it back sort of 3-4 times today, I'm going to be honest, like, it's an absolutely fucking phenomenal finish for me.
It's like it reminded me of like a snooker shot, because he's used it like used the end of his foot like a pool cue. And it made me laugh, because earlier today on the Spurs Facebook feed, they posted that, you know, when BT Sport have people trying to recreate goals.
He did the Ronaldinho one, so he
perhaps if that was in the build-up to this, maybe that was in the back of his mind. Maybe just use your toes.
That's a good point, actually, mate. That genuinely, that's a good point. It'd be interesting to know. But the fact he's kind of, you know, we saw that the goal against Palace with this guy. I'm sure there's other examples now, but it seems to be that Dele Alli, that's kind of where he separates himself from your kind of... Because I get it. I get why some people get a little bit frustrated with him. I think, you know, he can kind of disappear from games here or there sometimes. I mean, the lad has just turned 20. He is still learning his trade. But it's those moments where he has to rely just on instinct and split-second decision-making that he just shows this extra level of class. That I know it's a bit proper football, man, but that kind of intangible, can't-be-taught sort of quality that is really, really encouraging still about Dele Alli as a footballer for years to come. It's almost like he's set the benchmark so high that people kind of forget about how exciting a talent he is and how young he is. And because, you know, he came in to the fold at probably a lot more quicker than many people were expecting. And yeah, everyone was kind of wowed by his performances in pre-season and so on and so forth. And then,
yeah, well, we sort of thought it was going to be, you know, one or two Carling Cup and Europa League appearances, and a main part of the season would have been in the development side. But, you know, he quickly established himself as one of the more important players in the first team. And it was, you know, even when you think about it now, the fact that last season was his first season in the Premier League for us, it's ridiculous how quickly he went from a League One player at Milton Keynes to, you know, one of the most important players for not only his club but his country as well.
Where do you like him playing the most, Raj, at the moment?
It's interesting, actually, how sort of Pochettino's changed his team around since Wanyama's come in, and Dembele's been a little bit sort of short of fitness and had the odd knock or two, because we had that game against Monaco, where he started deeper, and that midfield just didn't work, and it was a large contributing factor to why they scored the two goals they did, is because we're a little bit more disjointed than we usually were. Because I think we got a little bit carried away. I mean, we've discussed that before now. But since then, he's not really toyed with that too much. He's pretty much told Wanyama to just sit and not move and be the sole defensive midfielder. And he's gone 4-1-4-1 and pushed Dele up with Eriksen. And if anything, Eriksen's been the one that's dropped back and helped Wanyama out when needed. And then the two wide men obviously play a tad bit higher and wider with Janssen usually in the middle. So I think even Pochettino has admitted to himself that he's not really got the... what's the word I'm looking for? Almost the temperament to play that holding role in the manner that Dembélé does, where he picks his moments to have the surges forward, and he's a little bit more sort of calm there because he still has that bit of a bit of fire in his belly and that rawness to his game, which is half the reason why he's so good. Lest we forget, he is a bit more useful further forward, and I think that's likely where his future will be for us. Anywhere in that three behind Kane or Janssen, he does a job, and we've spoken about how fluid they are, so it doesn't really matter. I still think our probably the first choice three behind Kane or Janssen is essentially three number tens. So none of them really naturally suited to any of the positions they play, but because they're moving around so often, it doesn't really make too much of a difference. You could even extend that argument and say that Harry Kane's a number 10 if you really wanted to, and he's just sort of good enough to be a number 9, because, as you said before, he's a freak.
He is a freak, isn't he? Let's leave that one in the dust anyway. West Bromwich Albion, fuck you.
I mean, before the game, you'll have been disappointed not to get 3 points, but to go down at the time in the game we did, to rescue a point, I mean, it's going to be one of them where it's not too bad playing that.
Of course, and I think as we saw at the tail end of last season as well, when it does get to that point in the season, you want as many, you don't want to be going back thinking, we missed out on our point there, because it may not feel that much now, but as we know, perhaps not with the way the league ended, but... with regard to Leicester and the considerable gap they opened up, but at least in the run up to that, 1 point here or there does make a massive difference. So I guess we've got to kind of be happy with it in that respect and just not losing. I don't care. I'll state your controversial opinions. I don't care so much about the unbeaten run and that kind of thing, because I almost feel like they can kind of become a bit of a monkey in your back.
Exactly. I made this point earlier on this season. Where Huddersfield were concerned with the start that they made, because the lad that I go with was disappointed when they lost their first game. And I said to him, these things can often work against you sometimes. The season before in the Championship, Brighton went a ridiculous amount of time unbeaten, but they drew half of those games and they almost developed a fear of losing. So rather than going out to win matches, they were going out not to lose them, to extend this run. And it took their killer instincts away a little bit, because they had this record they wanted to keep going. So they didn't accumulate half the points they could have done, because they were far more cautious than they would have been otherwise.
I'm pretty sure we almost said that about Spurs last year, because we did have a similar unbeaten run, didn't we, at the start of last season with Spurs as well, but we were drawing a hell of a lot of games. I can't remember what the game was that we actually ended up losing. Fuck that anyway. We've got Bayer Leverkusen tomorrow in the Champions League, which is... very nice thing to be able to say. Once again, it's gonna be a pretty tricky game, isn't it, mate?
It's gonna be absolutely fucking mental,
Kane especially.
Because if anything, their manager is sort of more sort of tactically sort of out there than Pochettino is. He makes them press even harder. He makes them run even further. He's sort of a little bit mental in that regard. There is a bit of a maverick element to what he does with his team. And it is going to be a sort of two styles that could well cancel each other out. But I don't think we're going to see a sort of a faster paced game in the Champions League.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think, like, quite you know, foolhardy of me to say that we'd had like a Europa League group. Really, in retrospect, it's a pretty tough group we've got. It's not the toughest, but you know, people like Bayer Leverkusen, they're not a two bob outfit. But their league form, looking at it, has been pretty patchy. I mean, they beat Dortmund a couple of weeks ago, which is obviously good, but they've just lost their last game to Werder Bremen. They're sort of sitting 10th in the table at the moment. So, you know, they're not coming into this kind of firing on all cylinders, looking like a kind of rampaging powerhouse of a side. But they've got a few dangerous players, don't they? Notably, Chicharito. Javier Hernandez, Mr. Kikarito.
I think it's like a Disney character.
Yeah, it sounds a bit noncey, doesn't it? It's a bit like, what's that, Pee Wee Herman? It's like a Mexican version of Pee Wee Herman. Mr. Chicharito. That's not racist or anything, is it?
I don't think so.
Don't know. Probably is, isn't it? Somehow or another. You know, all this political correctness gone mad's like, mate. But I'll be honest, I think they've got have they still got one of the Bender brothers?
Yeah, Lars. In their side? Yeah, Lars. Yeah. Sven's at Dortmund.
But I can't really name you anyone else in their side.
They've got the Australian, Robbie Kruse. He's quite good. They're one of those where it's more about the collective than it is individual names. I mean, they've got Stefan Kiesling as well up front, who's quite tall and handy in the air and stuff. And he's one of those where he'll sometimes go on like good, decent runs of scoring, but doesn't ever seem to build on that, which is perhaps why he's still at Leverkusen rather than having been snapped up by someone bigger. But they're not by any means sort of an easy game. Like I said, the style that they play is perhaps the most interesting thing about this, especially at home, because they're going to raise themselves for this sort of occasion. And it's one of those where I don't think it's the biggest arena in the world either, because I don't think it was one that was built up for the World Cup in 2006. Because that's why people have, like Dortmund and everyone, have really nice grounds now, is because the German FA put so much money into them. Because I think Bayer are owned by that pharmaceuticals company, aren't they? I don't think they got any extra money or infrastructure built into them. I think it's actually smaller than White Hart Lane. It'll be quite interesting. We'll see what happens. I mean, a draw isn't a bad result away in the Champions League. I don't think you just have to win your home games.
Yeah, well, let's hope we can smash them anyway. Now, at this point, we might be speaking to someone from Bournemouth, but we might not be. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. I lost the ability to speak there for a second.
Hello, this is the official spokesperson for Rule the Roost podcast, text-to-speech. As you can probably tell, we didn't manage to get in touch with those Bournemouth fans. All we can tell you is that they are quite good for a club with a ground smaller than most terraced houses. We'll be linked with their manager at some point in the future, and the game should be open enough for us to nick a few goals and play our game quite happily. If none of that proves to be true, what the fuck more do you want from me? I'm essentially a robot. Back to the show.
Right, welcome back. You may have just heard from a Bournemouth podcaster. You may have not. If you haven't, we're not really going to talk about Bournemouth, aside for the fact that Eddie Howe's quite good in Erads. They've been playing quite well. And
they just bought 6 past Hull.
Yeah, they have. God bless Ryan Mason, Tom Hodderstone, Jake Livermore, Michael Dawson. Anyone else? Am I missing any Spurs lads? No.
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
But, Bournemouth, decent side, should stay
Bournemouth up. Bournemouth got a couple of Spurs players, haven't they? Adam Smith.
Charlie Daniels.
Yeah, Adam Smith was, he's doing really well. I think there were a few people touting him for an England call-up recently.
Yeah. Do you reckon Jermaine Defoe will go back there one day?
Bournemouth?
Yeah.
If they can pay him 70 grand a week. I'm not sure. They got linked to him previously, didn't they?
When he was
sort of on the verge of leaving Sunderland when they looked like they may have been going down. But I'm not sure they're as desperate. They've got a decent few options up front. Josh King and Callum Wilson aren't too bad.
It's funny, they're just another one of those sides that seem to be establishing themselves now really as a Premier League team, aren't they? Even though they were sort of, I mean, maybe it's a bit early to say that about them, but they look solid enough. They look like a team that deserve to be in the Premier League.
They've got decent financial backing. I mean, they are owned by a Russian oligarch, but he's not really spent the sort of outlandish sums of money that you'd have expected somebody like that to have done. Which I think is to their credit, if anything. He's just sort of, he stabilised the club, but he's doped them financially too much.
Maybe obviously now he's biding his time.
Yeah, we'll see next season. But, you know, they're a tiny club. They've got that, it's less than 12,000, isn't it, their stadium, which is ridiculous.
I think they'll have to up that, won't they, if they stay? Because I think, is it 3 years you get or something to stay in the Premier League? Otherwise, you've got to find somewhere else to go that's of a certain capacity.
Something like that. But I think it's one of them funny grounds that's built right into a housing estate, isn't it? Mm. Right by the seaside and that. So it's not going to be an easy job by any means. They might have to rip it up and start again, to be honest. I mean, there's not an awful lot to rip up, if we're being honest.
No.
They might have to find a new site or something, I'm not sure. But it is a very small ground, and I quite fancy going to it before it does go down, just to sort of see what it's like to watch football in that sort of small stadium.
Yeah, I never got to go to Fratton Park, annoyingly. I always wanted to go down there as well when Portsmouth were up in the league, but
they're not coming back anytime soon.
No, fucking not. Craven Cottage is always a good away day, though. That's a nice one. It's a really good away day, actually, that. But yeah, just in terms of those sort of small old stadiums.
I'm off to Preston away on Wednesday.
Oh, it'll be a good laugh.
Deepdale, yeah. Deepdale's a nice little place because we've got family in Preston. So it's a ground I've often driven past, but never actually been in for a game. So I'm looking forward to going and seeing what it's about. A
lot of history there, isn't there? I think they're one of those clubs that there's like that tenuous kind of, the reason why we switched to Lily White is because Preston North End lent us their kits or something like that. I don't know how true that is or not, but you often hear about these stories of, clubs adopting Notts County, Juventus, that kind of thing.
Real Madrid, Leeds United.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Really?
Yeah, well, in that Leeds changed their kit from blue and yellow to white.
Okay.
Not the other way around.
Grasshopper Zurich with Blackburn Rovers as well.
Is it?
Yeah.
Remember when we did that 125th anniversary shirt that was sort of like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Blackburn feel. 4-4 with Aston Villa in it.
Glad they didn't go to our old ones where we used to play in like fucking red and stuff, you know, we shouldn't. It's the uncomfortable truth that people don't like, but yeah, we used to have a red kit.
I think Arsenal's white sleeves are based on our shirts, aren't they? Because there's some director went over from Tottenham to Arsenal.
Something like that. Herbert Chapman, isn't it? Something to do that.
He was he cut his teeth at Huddersfield and then he went and made Arsenal into what they are. Because Huddersfield were thrice champions. They won the league back to back to back. I think they've got more league titles than Tottenham do. I'm not joking. They've got three and Tottenham have got two.
Yeah.
It's an odd little game, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Let's do some list of questions. Nikhil Siglani, everyone knows him very well. @Nikhil_Siglani. Poch can't travel to Bournemouth on Saturday for family reasons. Is that true? Didn't know that. But he says, what celebrity do you trust to take his job for the day? I'll do it.
I think given the second half of the question, I think the first half isn't true.
I'll do it. I'll take it. I'm Tottenham celebrity. Oh, yeah, I'll do a podcast. And
you nearly passed out watching a goal from the stand, so I don't trust you on the touchline. They'd have to resuscitate you after 5 minutes.
But I'm glad that you questioned that part and not the fact that I'm a celebrity. So, you know.
We'd definitely lose the match. I just care about your health first.
I do, for anyone listening, I do sign autographs. So if you ever do see me in and around the ground, I'll happily sign stuff for you. And, you know, it's just the esteem I hold myself in, if you believe certain people. Let's answer the question probably. What celebrity do you trust to take his job for the day? Oh, I don't really know, mate. You know.
Do they have to be a Tottenham fan, or is it just any celebrity that we want in to go and just do a job?
Pep Guardiola? I don't know, you know.
I don't know. I don't know which celebrity I'd pick.
Brian Blessed, maybe. I'd like to see him booming from the sidelines. That might be quite good.
I think it's get shit out of players, wouldn't it?
I hope he might do, yeah.
I don't know. I choose our support staff.
Right, we'll do it that way.
I trust them.
A reassuringly boring answer.
Yeah. Hugo Ekio.
It's all going to be quiet on the Hugo front, actually, isn't it?
He's like a under-18s coach or something.
Yeah, right? But we always used to get like those sort of updates, and they always sort of Spurs, if, like the social media accounts would slap him in as many pictures as they could and stuff, and they sort of... sort of stop that a bit now.
Maybe after our last youth team coach got a bit uppity and went for the job, they think better of that this time around.
True. Right, at Idiot's Pasture, good friend of the show, very good friend, and good friend of yours
the man who plays guitar on our theme music.
That's it. Made especially for Rule the Roost podcast.
it wasn't.
But he asks, in a Spurs Royal Rumble, who would win? Is he a wrestling person, Raj?
Possibly.
You didn't tell me there was a wrestling fan making our theme tune, mate.
Is Royal Rumble's the one where they all get in together, don't they?
Or have a big twat each other. Yeah, tear up.
So it's essentially who's the hardest member of the squad is what it really boils down to.
Oh yeah, it's a good one. It's Dembele, isn't it?
I think Dembele, Alderweireld and Dier are left in there.
Wanyama as well.
Yeah, Wanyama too. I think Wanyama's a bit thicker. I think somebody like taps Wanyama on the back and like somebody else knocks him out. I think maybe he gets like tricked out of it.
Do you reckon? I think I disagree with that one, mate.
Have you seen his tweets? I ate spaghetti, it was nice. He's definitely getting tricked.
Yeah, don't you think that's a bit tongue-in-cheek?
No.
You don't?
No, I think he's a little bit simple. Maybe to be fair, it is his second language, but he does just look like he's sort of like, he does look a bit daft to me. Because even when he's in interviews and that, he just sort of, he says the least amount possible. Whereas it's not, you know, people learning language still manage to express themselves a bit more. I mean, have you ever heard Hugo Lloris speak? The man's a philosopher.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? But
yeah,
he's I love him. I'm gonna call Dembele. I think Dembele wins it.
Mm. I think like Danny Rose would like sneak around on like hiding corners and shit and get quite deep.
I tell you what, one thing I will say, like, is footballing ability aside, Moussa Sissoko is an absolute unit as well. I hadn't really realised until he's playing for us and seeing him alongside some of our players, but the boy is massive. He's so big, so he could be up there as well, to be fair.
Yeah, sounded a bit erotic, that.
I know, didn't it?
No, I think that's about it. I can't see anybody else really sticking out too much. If Pochettino got in there, I can imagine him being a bit of a Charles Bronson, sort of rolling back the years, greasing himself up, start bollock naked. Just, you know, taking it to everyone.
He's an incredible man.
No, but have you ever seen like videos of him when he were younger playing and that?
Oh, yeah. Hard nut. Proper hard nut.
Yeah, and you don't lose that. You'll have old man strength now as well.
Yeah. I tell you what as well, it would be one to boil the piss of a certain demographic, but I would say without a shadow of a doubt, if it was a proper, you know, proper tear up, toe to toe, one on one, him and Sherwood, I'm calling Pochettino every day. I think he's gonna.
Oh, Pochettino kills him.
He kicks seven shades of shit out of him.
If there's no rules in this Royal Rumble as well, I'm gonna stick my outside bet with Beer at Lamella, because I think he's the one who's like, he's coming with shivs in his socks and stuff, and he's been, you know, he's poking people in eyes and like, you know,
biting,
double team. Yeah, he's the scrappy one that sort of people don't want to fight because he's gonna take it too far.
Horrible little bastard.
Yeah, he gets that look in his eyes that you just don't want. You know, when you're like, did you ever any like have any proper rough estate kids at school where like nobody ever want to fight?
That was me, mate. That was me.
They just had that wiry boxing quality about them. Yeah. You know, like Brad Pitt in Snatch.
Yeah,
that sort of one punch knockout style about them. Yeah, that's the type of person I imagine Eric is when it gets down to it.
Jack at Debaser 92 on the Lamella theme asks us on.
I thought you'd completely lost sense of reality and you'd sent your own question in.
On current form, should Lamella start? Yes or no? Yeah, I reckon so. I see why. Maybe why people are finding him a little bit frustrating, but I still think he's always under that microscope of being watched more closely. It's almost like, you know, people are waiting for him to slip up, and I don't think he's, you know, performed drastically poorly by any stretch of the imagination. He still has a massively positive influence on the games. Although one thing I have seen kind of floating around is quite a few people floated the notion on Twitter that he seems to be best coming off the bench, like when we need to preserve a lead or chase a lead. Having him come on in that kind of 65-70 minute mark, we often seem to get the best out of Eric Lamella. I'll be honest, I haven't really noted it either way. I just like having Lamella in the side. But I don't know, is that anything you noticed previously or anything at all, Raj?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. The only thing with Lamella is I think he's the main casualty of how good Son's form's been, and that sort of that's his natural place in the team's been taken up by someone else. If you're choosing it on best form, I mean the only way I can see of sort of fitting him in now is if you were to drop Janssen and play Son from the start, which maybe is what he goes for away at Leverkusen. I'm not sure. That's how he went. Did they do that in Cesca or did Janssen start?
No, Janssen started.
Which was the game we did it against? Was it City?
Yeah, City.
Yeah, City. So he could do that. I mean, it's not unprecedented for them both to start, and especially with the level of pressing that is going to be expected of them against Schmidt's side. I can't see that happening again because it's almost sort of a similar sort of situation with Man City in that, you know, it's another intelligent manager. So it wouldn't actually be the biggest surprise in the world to see him try and replicate that performance and tactics if possible.
So I'm going to look here. Okay. Joshua Brown at Josh Brown Spurs asks, Wanyama is playing like peak Essien. Discuss. I don't know if I sort of liken him stylistically that much to Essien, but I would say that Wanyama does look fucking brilliant, and I'm absolutely delighted that we have him on our team and he's made that position his own at the moment. That's all I can really say on that one, to be honest. I don't know, like, are you enamored with Victor Wanyama at the moment, Raj?
Yeah, I absolutely love him. I think he's sort of come in and done everything we've expected of him and more. He's sort of, because sort of he's aware of what Pochettino wanted to do from having played under the remnants of that sort of a system at Southampton, then we know. Did he actually play for Pochettino at Southampton? I'm not sure they overlapped.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, then that's probably why the transition's been as smooth as it has been. But it, again, it's one of those where, you know, there's no good reason why Eric Dyer can't come in and do and exactly replicate that job as well. It's nice to have that option. But I do think he gives just an extra level of sort of force to the way he plays. Just not even talking about sort of in his tackling, because Eric Dyer will happily snap through people. But in terms of sort of the rate at which he presses, because it is relentless. If you sort of just keep an eye on him at the bottom of the screen when the other team has the ball, he's constantly zipping around and constantly sort of closing down passing lanes, if not pressing people feet to feet. So it's really impressive to watch in that sense. And one thing that sort of people had said before he'd come is that occasionally he might have a night off and only raise himself when he's on TV or against the big side. And I think because he's at a bigger club now, because there is a bigger incentive to keep his spot and play in the bigger competitions. And there's a battle for places as well. He's raised his game and he's benefited from that.
Craig at Craig_S_Ed asks, will you be my boyfriend? Of course I will, Craig. Any man that can...
How do you know he's asking you?
Well, let me just see, because he's done it to @Atatrunk, so there you go. Right, but yeah, I will, Craig. Any man that can paddle, basically. He's to give you some backstory on this, Craig has recently travelled from, let me have a look, where has he travelled from? So this is a chap who walked from Liverpool to London in 5 days and for cancer support.
I was going to say, did nobody land him the train money?
Yeah, but he's recently done it from London.
How much did he raise?
$5,000 last time.
That's outstanding work.
Yeah, and he's just recently now gone in a kayak from London to Liverpool.
After you've done them first couple of walks, mate, just, you know, make the rest of us look bad.
Yeah, I know, right? But if you have a look, yeah, go on Craig's Twitter profile, @Craig_S_EdEd, at Ace Paddlers fundraising page, because they've essentially raised money for Alzheimer's, cancer and epilepsy, three charities close to their hearts, so hence where they got the acronym ACE from. And yeah, he's done it with a pal of his called Nick as well. They've hit the $5,000 mark again this time around, so yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Chuck him a few quid, listeners.
Yeah, of course. That's excellent.
Nicely done, Craig. So yeah, of course I'll be your boyfriend, mate, because you're a hero.
Sounds like he needs somebody to like just give him a rub down of an evening.
I know, he's got a lot of energy to expend, doesn't he? So, you know, I know where we can, oh, Christ, stop it now.
You had to take it to the base.
Well, that's what I'm here for, mate, you know, it's my function. You know, I've got to tick my boxes. Let's have a look. All right, Brett at BR Nurse asks us, based on looks alone, all right, who do you think would make the best pop star at Spurs? Good question.
Billy Lee.
Shout. Yeah, probably. It is, isn't it?
Because he's got that youthfulness you need to be a pop star, I think.
That, yeah, pop star or YouTube celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like doing FIFA games or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Doing that kind of thing. Yeah, I think you smashed it with that one, haven't you?
Saying that though, Harry Winks has got, because I tweeted this the other day, Harry Winks looks like every solo act who's gone in about 17, 18 years onto X Factor has then been put into a makeshift boy band and then like been made to cry when he's been sent home at Judge's Hour. If you just look at him, because it was that picture they did of him leaning outside the training ground in his white shirt looking that earnestly into the camera after he'd signed his new contract. He looks like sort of, you know, when X Factor every single year try and recreate One Direction, he's one of the fodder that is in one of those bands.
I tell you what he is to me though. He's the sort of lad that you look at him and you think he's going to have like he probably talks all like squeaky and all like that, but the reckon he starts singing, he's got like a real like crooning voice and he sings all the old like Frank Sinatra numbers, that kind of thing.
Well, that's usually my choice when I do karaoke, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I do all the Rat Pack classics. That's my favourite. It's my one sort of vice in life is doing that sort of a thing.
Do you want to give us a little blast?
No, I have to have a few bevs down us before that starts. I'm one of those annoying ones. I say this like I go karaoke every week, but I've only done it like two or three times in my life. I'm one of those annoying ones that sort of at the start of the night, it's just like, nah, it's not for me. But like, you know, when your time's ending and like you've only got time for like one or two more, like you're having to kick off and like, come on, lad, you've had four in a row.
Yeah.
Let someone else have a go. Yeah, it takes a while to work up spirit, but once you've got it out of the way, that's it. You know, you're in front of, you know, Nebworth.
That's it, Nebworth. Right, that's it for listener questions this week. Let's should we end on a bit of a TV filmy bit, Raj? Do you got much to say about anything?
We can do, yeah. What have I seen recently?
Atlanta, you keep telling me to watch.
Yeah, Atlanta's brilliant. Atlanta is genuinely brilliant. I mean, they keep having episodes now where it's one of the only 30-minute comedies where you sit down week by week and you don't know what's coming up next. They had one episode that was set on like a fake, like, have you ever watched BET or anything like that? Like Black Entertainment Television?
Can't say I have.
No, well, this is, they had like a spoof version of that. Where one of the characters, the rapper Paperboy, was on a panel, but instead of doing it as if just a normal show, they spoofed it as if it was actually being broadcast on that network. So they did all of the adverts and everything as well, to the point where I almost fast forwarded through the first one because I thought it was just a.
It's quite good.
A thing, but then I realised that no, they've made this entire half hour as if it was on a completely different channel. And it's just, it's really hard to explain because there's so many different threads to it. And, you know, the way they sort of give time to not only the secondary characters, but time to flesh out the tertiary characters is absolutely outstanding. And it's, FX do such a good job of allowing people with a singular vision to just see that singular vision through. And, you know, you can almost tell when some shows have almost that network notes have been sort of passed through it, and it, you know, the edges are, you know, sandpapered off and whatnot. Whereas this, it just doesn't have it. It's so worth your time. There's, I mean, I think it's only a 10 episode for a season, but it's such a good thing to watch, and it is one of those things where I am sort of really looking forward to it week on week when it comes on, and go out of my way to watch it the night it's on and stuff. Which is the same as that can go with High Maintenance, which is the old web series that I've told you about before, and has been picked up by HBO, where it centres around one guy who delivers a weed, but he doesn't have a name, he's just known as the guy, and it's sort of a almost like a look into people's lives that he sells the weed to, and it's like a just like snapshots of different people's lives. So it's almost like an anthology series with only like a handful of recurring characters, but it's quite nice when you see them again at different points. Like when this HBO series has come on, they've done a really cool thing, which is they've made standalone episodes again, but they've brought back characters that were originally in the web shorts. But they've progressed them. They've not tried to recreate that same episode again. They've just put them at a different point in their life. So it's really interesting to see these characters that you've seen in like a 10, 15 minute burst previously in a different stage in their life. It's so really intelligently done, and sort of the premise could be really shit, but it's really intelligent. There's like, sometimes there's a bit of a twist, and not in an M. Night Shyamalan way either. Like there's actually a really
cool shitty nappies.
No, like if I give one away from earlier on this season, and I'll only give one away rather than all of them, but the one that really got me was he walks into this apartment with these two guys, and one of them sort of, I think they're playing sort of like stereotypical sort of Hispanic hip-hop fans and like being really ultra-aggressive, and one of them just had an argument with his girlfriend, I think, And sort of it's really awkward for like 10 minutes you're watching this play out because he's not paying him yet. He's tried to pay him all in coins and like he's refused the coins and says he wants cash. So the guy goes back downstairs and then he gets a phone call from his girlfriend. And it's just watching this domestic scene play out with his one friend on the sofa who's been really awkward and not speaking and like forcing him to have drags on the weed that he doesn't want to have because he's still got work to do and stuff. And then when the guy eventually sort of shits himself and just takes the coins, puts it in his bag, sort of puts it off to a bad evening and leaves, the guy walks back upstairs and he sees he's gone and they drop their accent and it turns out the two English guys who have been doing an acting like exercise to try and get him into character. And there's little things like, I can't remember which word it is, but the guy on the sofa is essentially the guy who's been ultra aggressive in the vests, acting coach, and he said something in an English turn of phrase that Americans wouldn't say, and he's picked him up on it. And I actually had to go back and watch that scene again to see if I could see the little purposeful cracks they'd put in it. And it's so clever, and it's sort of one of them where once it happens, you just sit there and you watch it again with a broad smile on your face because you're like, I did not see this coming for the entire sort of set piece. And when they do the reveal, it's just so well done that it makes up for your time.
Thanks for ruining that for me then, mate.
I said I'd ruin one. There's loads more. There's loads more.
It does sound interesting. What's the name of it?
It's really clever. High Maintenance. They did one entire...
You've told me to watch that like several times. So.
Yeah, they did one entire 30-minute episode, which was a love story through the eyes of a dog. And I know it sounds terrible.
It sounds a bit bestiality. Like.
No. But it's genuinely beautiful. Like, I don't know how to explain it any further, but yeah, it's a 30-minute love story about a dog.
Is it just like, loves like fire hydrants and bones and all that type of shit?
No, he falls in love with his dog walker.
All right.
I know these things sound silly, but genuinely the way they're profound and sort of delivered is excellent. Mm-hmm. I would tell people to try and get hold of it.
High Maintenance. I watched
watch all the web series first and then watch the HBO show and you'll get far more out of it.
I watched American Honey this weekend.
I really want to see
in
that.
The cinema. Please do. It is one of those films that I can imagine a lot of people will go and see and it will get to the ending and they'll be like, is that it? What's happened? And so on and so forth. Because it is quite artsy. It's a very character-driven piece. But it is a bit long as well. It's pushing 3 hours.
Really?
Yeah. You can tell it's a very personal film for the director, so you wouldn't really want to restrict them, you know, to give them that kind of palatable 90-minute running time kind of thing if they feel they've got more to say. But it's a great film. It's shot like brilliantly. The acting is particularly good. I mean, even Shia LaBeouf's like very good in it. As much as he's a twat, I do think he's a pretty decent actor when he fancies it. And he does a good job here. I cannot remember for the life of me the name of the lead girl in it, but she's new essentially, and she's fantastic. Written and directed by Andrea Arnold as well, English director. I don't know if you'd seen Fish Tank that she'd done previously, but that's a great film.
I don't think so. I've seen one of her films. I don't think it was Fish Tank.
Kind of almost a bit of a breakout role for Michael Fassbender in that film, actually. But Fish Tank's, it's definitely one to go back and watch. But she's, Andrew Arnold, she's probably one of the best British directors going at the moment, I'd say. And I'm not just saying that in a virtue signalling way. Like, she's fucking amazing.
I saw her version of Wuthering Heights.
I haven't seen that actually. Is it
Caius Scodelario? That's the one I did see.
American Honey's great. It's really, really. The thing is, I don't really want to say too much about it because it's not going to ruin the story by any means. It's just
Yeah, it's one of those. If you, the less you know about it, the more you'll get to
help. Yeah, exactly. You know, just go with it, watch it unfold, and just enjoy it. Don't really go with any preconceptions. Yeah. It's a great film, just to enjoy in the moment. The thing I found about it is I'm still, a couple of days later, still thinking about various little bits and various themes and ideas that are presented throughout the film. And that to me is always a mark of a good film. It's not presented in a kind of way to make you think. It just does by its very nature of what it is. It's a very well put together piece of cinema. So yeah, do go.
Hashtag makes you think.
It does. Stay woke. Stay woke, folks.
I watched on Netflix the other day as well. I watched that. What's his name? I'm forgetting his name now, but it's called Easy.
I do want to watch that.
It's really, really good. There's one episode in particular that got me more angry at characters than I have been for a long time. I'm not going to spoil that after I spoil an episode of High Maintenance for you. It's Joe Swanberg, who did stuff like Drinking Buddies and that Anna Kendrick film around Christmas and stuff like that. They call this film Mumblecore, I think. But that just essentially means that there's no plot and all the characters do is live normal life and talk a lot.
Did he do that film Brief Interviews with Hideous Men as well?
Possibly. I'm not sure he directed it or not. He did. The last thing I saw him do was that Digging for Fire last year, which is the one that had the like massive cast in, like Brie Larson and Sam Rockwell and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Happy Christmas was that other Anna Kendrick one. But yeah, he's done loads of little films, which are all really good. And I sort of really enjoyed all the stuff he's done. He's a bit like the guy who made Francis Ha and stuff like that, if you've ever seen them. It's sort of akin to that sort of style. Yeah, and Easy's about sort of, again, it's sort of 8 episodes, but they're supposed to be individual episodes, but everyone sort of intertwines out of everyone else's stories around Chicago. So again, it's quite cleverly done and little snapshots of people's lives. I realise the more I talk about TV, the more I like that one style of series, which is sort of irreverent little vignettes of people's lives.
Yeah, they're nice though, aren't they? They're good. It's like it's kind of refreshing to have something that's a bit more grounded because, I don't know, it goes two ways, isn't it? You know, you have these sort of high-quality HBO-type set-piece things, like you say, high-concept, high-quality, high-production value, high-budget, and it is nice to have those, something that's so far removed from that, that you can almost immediately relate to because you can see these situations unfolding in your own social groups and relationships and stuff.
That's the thing, yeah. It's just nice to sort of be a bit voyeuristic into other people's lives for an evening. Because, I mean, people have been going on about Westworld, and I think we had this conversation between the two of us, and that there's a part of me that does want to watch it because I really like the concept.
Yeah.
I can tell they've had a lot of money spent on it, but at the same time, it's just like I can't be bothered to get into this because I can tell sort of after a season and a half, they're going to have asked every interesting question they have and written themselves into a creative corner and have no answers for themselves whatsoever. It's just going to build itself up to a point where all it can do is disappoint you. And I'm not sure I can have another series like that in my life.
It's one of those things that you feel like, and if they don't do that, then I'm happily proved wrong and I'll watch it, you know?
If it's still good after 2 seasons, then yeah, I'll be there.
If it builds up that kind of Game of Thrones type, you know, prestige around it, then you'd be happy.
But I don't think that's possible. I just think, you know, Game of Thrones is such a singular piece of work because of the books and everything that, you know, this one might be a poor imitation, but again, I'd happily be proved wrong and catch up later on down the line. But I've seen it happen so many times before, like, you know, Heroes and stuff.
Yeah, disappointing Heroes, wasn't it? It started Flash, so well as well.
Yeah. Flash Forward, I think it was called, the other one.
Yeah.
Really interesting sort of sci-fi kind of based ideas.
Was Flash Forward the one that was kind of Groundhog Day-ish?
Yeah. People kept living different days of their lives and shit like that. I can't remember. It's just that disappointment of it going, oh my God, this is brilliant. And then going, oh my God, these people have literally no idea what they're making anymore.
Luke Cage, I've kind of got, I know you don't like the MCU films and stuff at large. I honestly do think you need to give the series a bit of a chance because they are very different.
I do want to watch all the Netflix stuff. I just haven't had time to get around to them yet. I'm also confused about which order I should watch them in.
I'd heard an interview with Mike Coulter before I actually watched Luke Cage, and this is true. This does ring true. They make them in a way whereby you don't have to have seen the other series to appreciate them as a standalone. However, when you have seen the other series, you can kind of pick up on other little Easter eggy bits and so on and so forth. But if you want to watch them in a proper, like, because I know you are quite rigid with order and stuff like that. If you do want to watch it properly,
you can call me a geek if you want.
Daredevil season one, Jessica Jones, then Daredevil season two, then Luke Cage. Okay. That would be the way.
Aren't they making new ones now? Aren't they like Punisher and some Bone Crusher or something coming as well?
Yeah, Punisher's in where he makes his first appearance in Daredevil season two.
Is that what's his name? John Bernthal or something like that?
The guy that's in Walking Dead, yeah. Where the early series of Walking Dead. He makes
that's a spoiler to anyone who's not seen the Walking Dead.
But don't start watching it now anyway, if you haven't. But yeah, it's Luke Cage. I don't know that I do need you to watch it, mate, because I do need to talk about it with someone because I am enjoying it a lot. It doesn't feel quite on the mark for me though. That's the only thing. I have enjoyed it a lot. The production value is brilliant. The storyline, there's some good themes in there. But there's just something about it that's just not quite there. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's a bit corny, but it's almost like it knows. It's very self-aware in the fact it's a bit corny. But it is worth a watch. It's good fun. It's decent.
It's not that I don't like the Marvel stuff because superhero films by their very nature are cool when done properly. But I think because of the comic books I used to read when I was younger and stuff, I was always naturally more predisposed to sort of the Christopher Nolan approach to doing the three Batman films, which I think is still the high watermark of any the superhero genre. But the stuff with the Marvel stuff is because essentially even though the first 2/3 of the film may be completely different to what's happened before, and you know, I understand it's a continuation of sort of all this story that's happened, and they've earned themselves all this sort of real estate with the world building they've done. Every single film ends exactly the same fucking way.
I would say, mate, the series, they are probably, if anything, more Nolan-esque than they are like the MCU films. They're less colourful, they're a bit grittier. They're obviously intended for a more adult audience, I would say.
I mean, it's not even that, like, I just want them, it's not that I just, like, I have that thing of wanting them to feel like an adult film because I'm like, I'm somehow sort of insecure about the art I'm watching because you're talking to a man who bought a wand in Orlando in Harry Potter World this summer because, you know, that is still a series that I hold dear to my heart because, you know, it's what I grew up with and I'm really looking forward to how they're going to stretch 5 films out of this Fantastic Beasts series because it seems like, you know, the most exploitative cash cow possible, but because it's an intellectual property that's so close to my heart, I'll give them the rope to sort of win me over with. But it's just I get fatigued with the Marvel films because they do have all the similar sort of beats. They do have that sort of laughy, jokey exterior and the little quips and shit. And
bit too much collateral damage as well, I think. That's always one of my objections with the Marvel films.
And if there's one of them every 2 years, then I think I would sort of, by the time the next one comes around, be interested. You know, almost in the same way that James Bond, they leave just enough of a gap between that you sort of forget how disappointing the last one may have been. Because these are like once every 9 months now and there's like 2 a year, it's just, I can't. I can't abide it. I mean, yeah,
I've not watched Civil War or anything like that, actually, to be honest.
I still go because they're sort of like, my dad's really big into them, and they're usually like a family night out at cinema and whatnot. And I don't want to be the, you know, the arty journalist sat in his room going, I'm sorry, but I cannot invest any more time into the cinematic universe for plot reasons. I just got to go, yeah, I'll come and eat some Ben and Jerry's and sit there.
Sorry,
and
I'm watching the 300 Blows tonight.
yeah, I've got this Werner Herzog documentary I need to finish.
No, I'll
still watch them, but I'll still complain about them afterwards.
Yeah, fuck them. So let's kill it there. If you do want to listen to any of the previous episodes of Rule the Roost podcast, you can do so on Acast, on iTunes, or on the Rule the Roost website.
Jesus Christ, I know, right?
At rtr_pod.com. That's not it at all, is it? It's rtrpod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at rtr_pod. Yeah. Come on, you Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.